Okay, I'm going to ignore that. I was going to ignore it anyway, but thanks for telling me to. Okay.
Welcome, Mr. Adam Simkowitz. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We really appreciate you being coming and sitting down with us.
Absolutely.
I am so excited to have you here. We have a ton of members who have been working on your plays over the years,
oh,
who love
that's really
your
cool.
plays over the years. So they've been very excited when they found out that you were coming on the show.
That's great.
So yeah, thanks, man. Well, I just wanted to start maybe at the very beginning. Where did you grow up? Are you from New York or?
No, I'm from Connecticut. I'm from a small town called Colchester in Connecticut.
Nice.
Kind of out in the middle of nowhere a little bit. Like it's, you know, there were like 13,000 people growing up. Like it's a small town. There were like 88 people in my graduating class in high school.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So like a lot of us, you know, a lot of them, I knew them since kindergarten.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, you know, the same.
Same school? Yeah. So was the school from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, like different schools, but like all the same kids.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And are you still out in Connecticut? Is there still
Yeah, so we moved back like about 10 years ago and I live in my late grandmother's house.
Nice.
Not in the same nearby, but not like exactly the same.
Nice.
But my parents are like 15 minutes away or something, so it's kind of amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And how did playwriting start for you? Did you was it something that you always wanted to do? Or did you kind of fall into it by happenstance?
I was in a lot of plays, like starting in kindergarten, like
acting?
I was in plays. Yeah. Like
I was just
in plays, but also a lot of my teachers like would like write plays. And so it like was a thing that you could just do. And I really loved acting, but I knew it wasn't the thing. It wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm. Partially because I just like eventually it stopped being fun. I got stage fright and was just like, I don't like this anymore. Mm-hmm. But I really love theater. And so when I was in college, like I think the summer after my sophomore year, I decided I would write a play that summer. And then I did it again like the next summer. And then I took a playwriting class. And then I sort of haven't stopped writing plays since then.
Which college were you at when that happened?
I went to UMass, North Dartmouth.
Oh, nice. And what were you taking at school?
I originally went there because I thought I was going to study engineering.
Oh, okay.
But it became pretty clear that that's not what I was going to do. And so I was an English major and it's also a very small school, like much bigger than my high school, but like a very small college, which I think was helpful to me to be like at a small high school and then a small college, just before coming to New York and being like, oh,
yeah,
yeah.
And so, what made you want to write a play? The very first play that you wrote, did you see a play somewhere? What inspired?
I love theater and I had just been in a lot of plays and I would read plays and I guess not a lot of people do that who aren't theater people, but I guess I was theater people. So I was just like, oh, I think I'm gonna write, and it just came out much easier in dialogue than I took a short story writing class too, but like playwriting seemed a lot easier and just more naturally, and like the flow was there in a way that it wasn't for fiction.
Do you remember what the first play was about?
Yes, the very first play, and we'll talk about this later, but the very first play was very much influenced by The Marriage of Bette and Boo.
Yeah.
By Chris Durang, and by Night Mother by Marcia Norman. Both of them were later my teachers.
Wow.
But it was a comedy about suicide.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
And so after you discovered your love for writing and you're in college as an English major or also engineering, you wanted to go and do. So what happens next? Did you drop out of school and then go to, because I know you went to Juilliard, right?
Well, so I graduated from undergrad and tried to get into grad school. And I think it took me, like I only applied to NYU because I was like, well, I want to go to New York. And at the time, I didn't even know there were any other schools in New York. You know, this was like early internet. So like information was not super readily available. But eventually I got into Columbia. I think like, so let's see, I graduated in 99. And I, well, I get into Columbia fall of 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were in class for 2 days and then September 11th happened. Yeah. No, it was really intense.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was at Columbia for 3 years. And then a couple of years later, I got into Juilliard. And Juilliard's like a lot of the people at Juilliard have already gone to grad school and some of them haven't gone to undergrad. Like it's just like it's not a degree program. It's called a playwright's diploma.
Oh, okay. And what's I know that the actors program is like a rigorous audition process. What was, is there any sort of process like that to get into that program?
For the playwriting program, basically, I think the main thing is they just have to really like your play.
Oh, you submit one play? Is that what it is? Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And your like resume. And then, you know, if they like you, then you have an interview probably. And my interview was really easy for that. It was... and then I had applied several times before I got in. Mm-hmm. I think I had applied the same year that I applied to Columbia and also like at least a couple more times. But I finally got in 2005 and I left Columbia in, I don't know, 2004. So it was only like a year. Somehow, huh? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense. But anyway.
Yeah, so you went from Columbia to Juilliard or the other way around.
Yeah, there was like at least a year gap.
Cool. And so now you're at Juilliard, right? You're at this incredible school.
Yeah.
And two of your heroes,
two of my heroes are teaching me.
And what was that like being in class with Christopher Durang, let's say?
It was not like I thought it would be. I mean, they're both amazing teachers, but... Chris Durang is very soft-spoken, mm-hmm. And if you read his plays, when you meet the person who wrote the play, mm-hmm. it's like it's a very different experience of like, oh, this is the person who wrote these like amazing, outrageous, bonkers jokes in this play.
That's so funny.
Yeah, no, it's not at all like I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. I mean, he... would suddenly say something very soft-spoken that was like the most hilarious thing you've ever heard, but like also like, you know, he in general had a very calm, quiet presence.
Calm demeanor. And Marsha Norman, what was that like?
Kind of the opposite of
the
that.
Opposite?
I mean, not exactly opposite, but Marsha has a lot of energy. Hmm. Also very funny. Hmm. Very funny. Which you would not know from reading Night Mother, for example.
Yeah. And what were the classes that they were? Is it were the specific? What's a curriculum like?
I mean, it's basically a super fancy writing group.
Oh, okay.
And so, someone would bring in a play, we'd read it out loud, and then the two of them would talk about it.
So they were together in a class teaching.
Oh yeah.
Oh my.
It's
goodness.
Still that way now. It's David Lindsay Baer and Tanya Barfield.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's really cool.
That's really amazing.
And it's a free program.
That blows my mind. That's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
For playwrights, it's a free program. It's not a free program for actors.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of, you know, assistance.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I remember because we were doing like the list and Juilliard does have a lot of assistance for the actors too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. Okay, so you leave. Did any of your published plays, any of that come out of that? Any of the plays that you published ever come out from that class?
Well, Nerve was my was the play that I wrote my thesis play at Columbia. So the last play I wrote at Columbia, Food for Fish was the first play I brought into Juilliard. Pretty Theft is the play that got me into Juilliard. And then I think mostly what I wrote at Juilliard like was just like throwing a bunch of things at the wall. And I think a lot of them didn't really trying to think of, oh, Incendiary was like the last thing I wrote for them. Huh. And people really love that. But like that hasn't, that's been done like twice, two or three times.
So were those plays, they weren't published when you weren't there, or you got them published after, or were they already published?
So Nerve happened in 2006. So I had like, I'd been at Juilliard for like a year, and then Nerve and Food for Fish were both happening that summer in New York, off Broadway. Hmm. And then they were published like, you know, like 6 months later or something like that.
Is that normal to be in school and have plays published?
I mean, there's nothing, I don't know.
That's good. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, no, I mean, in some ways it's just like, you know, some people are having off-Broadway productions while they're at Juilliard sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like that's like a normal-ish thing that happens. Hmm. So in some ways, like sometimes much fancier things happen than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a, you know, it's like a, it's kind of an amazing summer to have two plays like 6 weeks apart.
Yeah.
Like both happen. And then DPS picked them both up.
Yeah.
Which was kind of awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you still in touch with Christopher Durang at all?
Yeah. Yeah. And Marcia. Nice. Yeah. Although I haven't talked to Marcia in a while.
Amazing. Yeah. That's really cool. Cool. So out of all of your plays, what was the one, the first one you wrote ever was Nerve? Is that?
No.
Out of the published ones?
No. There was one called Deflowering Waldo mm-hmm. that I written when I was like 24, I think.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 23. Hmm. And I got that. My agent at the time was really good with getting things published, and she just sent it to the publisher and they liked it and they were like, yeah, we'll publish this.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it, you know, it had been done like once or something, and there were supposedly two productions happening and I think one fell through, but like they still mm-hmm. published it and they were like, great, we like this. And it's another one of those plays that's like an hour long. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wacky. It's very Chris Durang, honestly. It's very like trying to, wanting to be that.
Which one of your plays, I always ask of all the players that come on, which one of your plays was the one that kind of gave your career that jolt, you know, the one that became, you know, pretty successful and got you known you know, kind of jump-started your career?
I mean, it's tricky because I feel like there are, like when I came out of Juilliard, mm-hmm. like Incendiary had all these fancy readings. Huh. And then nobody did it. Like really cool, like amazing readings, like Labyrinth
table readings.
And
South oh, nice.
Coast Rep. And like, it was like, and everyone was like, they're going to do it. And then like,
was Hoffman crickets. Involved during that time?
He was sitting in the audience. I talked to him for a minute or two afterwards.
Oh, nice.
He asked like, hey, can we put fire on stage? He was asking someone, like, is that a thing? Like he wanted like actual fire, I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they never did it, so.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
But I would say that like Kodachrome for me is like the one that's being done the most right now. Mm-hmm. And that was like kind of my biggest production, like in terms of like, it was a Lord production and it was, I mean, oddly, like I got less press from that than I did from like having a play off Broadway, mm-hmm. Which I still don't really understand that, but I mean, I guess that's what it is. Mm-hmm. But like so many schools do it, so many little theaters do it, so many theaters have done it.
Yeah.
So it's really like out there in a way that I think my other plays aren't. Marion, I have this play called Marion that's a Robin Hood play that's being done a lot too right now. So,
nice.
So that like the two of them are both being done like kind of
yeah.
A
well, let's
good
let's talk about Kodachrome a little bit. It's
sure.
an incredible play.
Oh, thanks.
I know it's being done. Is it? Are they preparing to do it? Because I saw online that they're doing a production of it.
Oh, there's so many productions.
Oh, already running right now.
I mean, you know, like little like, but like I'm trying to think like when's the next.
I saw something online.
Big-ish.
I think, was it here in New York or?
It has never been done. Well, it's like, I think like some high schools or colleges around here are doing it. Huh. But like it hasn't been done in New York. And it's kind of not really, mm-hmm. you know, like New York likes a play that's like a little edgy.
Yeah.
This play isn't edgy.
Yeah, it is a very sweet play though. I mean, I'm fascinated to hear as what gave you the idea to have the photographer kind of as the narrator of the play? Why a photographer? What's the what's the meaning behind that? Why did you pick that?
Oh man, I mean, I wrote this play a long time ago.
You're like,
at this point, it's like, it's, you know, it's like maybe 8 years ago. It's probably more than that. Mm-hmm. I was really interested in the idea of like taking a photo and then having it projected. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really cool thing that could actually happen. And it's trickier than I thought it was, but like people totally do it sometimes.
Yeah.
And then we did it in the original production too.
Yeah.
The idea of like, recording reality and then you like, you know, you learn that it's different than you think it is in the play. And
it was interesting that it was a photographer is that seeing things through the same situation can happen and people can see it through different lenses.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating for me. It's like, oh, it's that you can see it this way, but it can also be seen this way.
Totally.
And I just thought that was really cool. The fact that it was, the photographer. I also liked breaking the fourth wall. I love it when it's done right. And I think it's written really well. When she talks about being dead or whatever it is, that's a really cool moment because you don't know until the scene is with her husband and you're like, oh my God, what the hell's going on? That's crazy. So it's a really cool moment in the play where, and then also the guy at the graveyard can see her.
Yeah.
Why was he the only one that was able to see her? I don't remember.
Yeah. Like until the very end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there a reason why because he works at the cemetery?
He's just always been able to see ghosts. I mean, in college I knew someone like this who was like, oh yeah, I see ghosts. Like
just very casually.
Like, just, you know, like sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I see ghosts.
And he was also like, yeah, you know, like some of them, like, if they're a little grayer, like a little darker, then I try to kind of stay away from those ghosts. But like mostly they're like fine. And I found this completely fascinating, completely forgot about it. And then, but also like still sort of, I guess I remember it now. I'm thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
So.
Any inspiration for the name from the song, I think there's isn't there a Paul Simon song?
I didn't like the original title and the publisher didn't like the original title and they were like, and so we came up, we were like workshopping a bunch of different titles and Kodachrome is the one that we landed on. But I was like, it's not there are reasons not to do this. And one of them is the song.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that song and I love Paul Simon.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look in the beginning of Nerve, like there's a Paul Simon quote
The
beginning of Nerve too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But it was just it's just the best title we could come up with, honestly.
Yeah. It's funny because Paul Simon was having he had the title of his song was something else too.
Oh, really?
He was having trouble naming the song.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, Kodachrome just sounds great.
It does sound great.
But it does refer to film, right?
But like it also refers to a different era than like this takes place in. Also, it became really clear when high school started doing it that high school kids have no idea what that is and have never seen the word before and like I think the producer in Oregon where we did it, I think they were excited about it because they felt like it was a title that I think their older audience members would like, but now it's just being done at high schools. Mm-hmm. And colleges and small theaters, but mostly high schools.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's going to have like its 90th production this year. And hopefully I'll hit like 100 like sometime next year.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
So which is a first for me. So I'm really excited about like having that 100th production of something.
How many total plays do you have published? Because I know it's a lot.
I think it's 24 right now.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's all. And over what period of time did you write 24 of them?
I've written a lot more than 24 plays.
Oh,
like a lot, lot
yeah,
more.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know how many, 60 something.
Wow.
But De Following Waldo was probably the first one, which was written in like 2000 maybe. And then, you know, I'm having like one that I wrote like last year was just published or something.
Nice.
So it's like, it's over, you know, yeah, over like 20 something years.
Where do your ideas come from? Because they're all quite unique.
Yeah. I mean, I just get interested in stuff and just start. Well, I think if you talk to a lot of playwrights, this is kind of the way they do it. I think I just write more plays than a lot of playwrights do. But basically, you just have like a lot of things that you're interested in, a lot of ideas, and you're like, oh, someday I want to write a play about that, and mm-hmm. someday I'm interested in that. And then, like, you just kind of figure out like what are the two ideas, or like what does this play go with this play, or like what are the do I know enough about this world, or do I know enough about these characters, or do I know enough about this thing that I want to write about that I can write this yet? Mm-hmm. And whatever thing I'm most excited about, that becomes like the next thing that I write. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, there are, you know, just notebooks full of like things that I want to write someday mm-hmm. that I have like, you know, scenes about this, and like, oh, I kind of want to write this. And, you know, like Incendiary was all about like, oh, I wanted to write a noir thing that also would be like fun for these like Juilliard kids to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just like, I mean, like I've never written a murder mystery, and that's like on my list of like, I want to do that someday. Like one of the things I want to do, but like have to figure out how to do that, 'cause I've never done that before, mm-hmm. for example.
Awesome.
So, but like there are lots of like, I really am interested in this character, but I don't know how to quite write it. Like it's like all different kinds of things.
Incredible. Well, one of my favorite plays of yours is this one, Nerve.
Oh, thanks.
I love it. It's a wonderful two-hander if people are watching and you want an incredible two-hander to do. It's really, really amazing about a very awkward first date.
Yeah, yeah.
Between two people that are deeply, you know, there is
some problems.
It's funny,
yeah.
But they have some very deep rooted issues that
they have some problems.
They have some problems. Yeah, have you ever had a date like that or something like that? Or
I mean, it's like, you know, comedic.
Yes,
but like sort of autobiographical in that like went on some, you know, there was a period in my life in which I was going on some internet dates.
Okay.
Back when we called them internet dates.
Internet dates, yeah.
Yeah, like it was there was a there was a website, it was like an online magazine or something called Nerve.
Okay.
And also Time Out was they like cross-posted, like it, so there was posted both on Time Out and on Nerve. But so I think, so like people who went to see this would know that, because this was 2006 and we were, you know, like
so Nerve,
people would have heard of Nerve back then.
So what would the post be in Nerve that people would see?
It's like, I feel like it's, I don't know what the apps are because it's been like 20 years. but like kind of similar to that in some ways. It's like, you kind of like, you have a little thing about yourself and a photo, and people like look at them and like contact you if they want to meet up, kind of thing.
And so you put your number in the, in like your number was
your like email.
Oh, your email. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people, it was like a newspaper?
Online.
Oh, it was online. Okay. It was
but
online.
Like,
okay,
yes,
okay.
Also newspapers. Oh, but it, I don't, okay. I think that, I don't know if people,
interesting.
How many of them were actually on,
and, so,
and like Craigslist and like, you know, misconnections right. on Craigslist. And yeah, like, yeah, it was like that era.
Got it.
Where kind of the infancy of online dating.
Got it. Yeah. So you went on a series of.
So I went on some.
Bad dates.
I went on some dates.
Yeah. And that's what inspired Nerve.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Really, really funny play. There was some, actually, was it this play or, I know it was another one. There was, I wanted to ask you. Oh yeah. The Paul Simon quote.
Yeah.
I'll read it. Ask somebody to love you takes a lot of nerve. Ask somebody to love you, you got a lot of nerve.
Yeah. Do you know that song? It's a great song.
What song is that from?
No idea right now. I mean, I can hear it in my head, but yeah, like.
That's amazing. Well, I wanted to ask you a lot about Rare Birds. I just finished reading this today. It was really,
oh, cool.
Really cool. It deals with, obviously, a topic that I would say is even more probably relevant today than ever, which is, you know, school bullying and a lot of things, you know, violence in school and all sorts of stuff. I was bullied in high school mercilessly.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Suffered a lot of bullying when I first, because I went from the Middle East to Canada, and it was like a really big culture shock.
Yeah.
And I was very different, and I was very small, just like the character in this book.
Oh, and me.
Yeah. I was in the 10th grade, but everybody thought I was in the 8th grade. I was just very short. I didn't hit my growth spurt till like the 12th grade.
I still haven't hit
mine. But so I related a lot to everything that happened in this play, but it's a wonderfully sweet play. I wanted to ask, is this also kind of autobiographical? Were you bullied in school in some sort of way?
I wasn't, I don't think I was bullied a lot in school, but I definitely felt like I didn't belong there. I definitely felt different and like it wasn't really my people. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say, I mean, I do have like a few friends from high school that I'm in touch with, but I just felt like, oh, this isn't like nobody gets me. I don't know what I'm doing here kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's like a play about being like the weird kid, being like the kid who doesn't quite get it, the kid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was very interested in writing like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, you know, for the kid in this, it's like he's fascinated by birds, but it's like whatever you're into. Like for me, it was like theater, which I think, you know, became the thing that helped me a lot. But like at the time, you know, it's fine. It's just a thing I did.
You weren't into birds? I was going to ask you that.
No, I'm more into birds now. Like they're amazing. And they're like everywhere near where I live. Like there's just a, but I think that's just like middle-aged man thing of like, middle-aged person thing. Yeah. Of like, oh, birds. I suddenly noticed birds.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's so interesting. There's a person right at the top that you thank. I was just very curious about that. I think it was in this play. Is it? There's a name in here, Kristen or something.
My wife, Kristen Palmer.
It says thank you to Kristen somewhere. I think I don't remember which play it was in, but it was. Maybe that's your wife. Oh yeah,
my wife's Kristen Palmer, who's also a playwright.
Oh wow,
yeah,
amazing.
I thank her as frequently as possible.
I think that's what it was. But anyway, that's interesting. That's what I was wondering. Amazing. So in the in Rare Birds, he doesn't end up. The parents have a pretty unique relationship with the kid. Mm-hmm. They are. The mom is obviously theme, the missing father theme kind of shows up a few times in your plays, in different plays. Just curious to know. I wasn't sure if that was.
I mean, that's not really autobiographical for me. You know, I think I'm kind of for both my wife and my mother, they lost their dad when they were like in their teens or like a little bit older. I don't know. I think it really hit something inside me. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about like losing your father at that young age. Mm-hmm. No.
And anybody else in your family, like are anybody else like in the creative world or?
No.
I get that a lot.
So it's hard. It's hard. It's you know, our son is, you know, we're both playwrights and we're both theater people. And my wife also teaches and she directs sometimes and stuff. And so there's a lot of games that are just sort of theater games in our house, like just casual theater games. And our kid, like he's, you know, he's already like, let's write a play. He's already like, let's, you know, he's acting and he's just like, I don't know if he's going to be a theater kid, but he's a theater kid.
He's got all the more
things. And like the advantage of like him like being surrounded by this, like I feel like I wish I had something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, if, you know,
Well, you
if,
never
it,
know.
If it's a good life.
Yeah, it could have been the other way. I don't have anybody. Nobody in my family is in the creative space either. It was actually kind of weird, like for me doing it as even being Middle Eastern. It's like,
oh, okay.
Well, in Middle Eastern culture, there's like your parents think there's like two professions, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, and not my parents. My parents have actually been very, very supportive, it's been wonderful. Pretty Theft.
Oh man,
incredible play. Was this one done a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot. No, not at all.
It is one a lot of people talk about, though, when we bring up your name.
The monologues are done constantly.
Yes.
The monologues are done so much that people have posted about how you need to stop doing that monologue. Like, there's like a – last year, like someone who has reached England.
Yeah.
Because there's someone in England who was doing a – you know, auditioning a lot of – a lot of acting students in lots of different programs and posted, you know, here are the plays that you should stop doing monologues from. And I recognized like one or two of the plays and the rest were like all English plays that I'd never heard of. And I'm like, oh, I should find out what these plays are. But I like immediately reposted and was, I guess.
It was your plays that they had mentioned?
Yeah, Pretty Theft was, they were like, don't do this. Backstage also posted at one point, like, stop doing this place, this monologue's being done too much.
Stop doing Adam's monologues, right? Find something else to do, goddammit.
Someone had emailed me at one point and was like, our theater teacher said no more Adam Sandler's class because too many of us are doing it. Look, which I'm like, I don't encourage that. People should continue to do my monologues, but like, I think it's pretty funny.
I see the Ian monologue because we have your monologues on our site a lot.
Oh, Ian from Mercy.
Ian from Mercy.
Yeah.
We get so many hits on our site because we have the monologue on our site.
Yeah.
And then on, Google is just filled. Sorry, not Google, YouTube. Is filled with videos of people who have recorded your monologue. It's just there may be 100 videos of people doing Orville from is a huge one.
Yeah.
That one's from
And the Rare Birds. They do the one from Rare Birds too, the Evan monologue from Rare Birds.
Ah.
Yeah. People like that.
Yeah.
But Pretty Theft was like the first one in which this started happening. And this play, you know, was published in like 2009 or something. And
that's crazy.
It, you know, like a few years, let's say, I don't know, 4 or 5 years after it was published, like suddenly we were selling a bunch of copies. And it was like kind of word of mouth and suddenly like, and it kind of hasn't stopped. It's just, I still, like, I think that play is probably still the bestseller.
This
of
one?
Like, of like all my plays.
Amazing.
Not done that much, but like
you think
it's got
like
it's got
a
bunch of
part?
Monologues in it that people really like to do. And that's why.
I've always been curious over the years of being in school and working, you know, working on plays for as long as I have been and you know, as long as all actors are when they're training. You know, you read a lot of plays and you work on a lot of plays. Mm. The monologues are some of those moments that kind of almost attract you to the – and it's because usually in a play, those monologues are what kind of – it's kind of what describes the character. Really, the essence of that character is – or what the character is going through is really in those monologues or whatever it may be. And so – I was always curious to know when you're writing a play, is it ever in your mind, all right, I'm gonna write a fantastic monologue for this character and this monologue is gonna be great or whatever it is, because they are important parts in plays. Like when Hamlet does To Be or Not To Be or whatever it may be. There's all these like, you know, these moments in these plays that are signature moments for these really big characters in theater, whatever, like in Streetcar Named Desire or whatever it is. There's all these moments that there is. Do you ever think, this is going to be the signature moment? Or do you just write it and if it happens organically, it happens organically?
Do you know, I have a couple different answers for this.
Okay.
One is I... recently realized that I have like only one play that doesn't have a monologue in it. Almost all my plays have monologues in them. Some mm-hmm. have multiple monologues. Some yeah. have like one. I think where it comes from is when I was studying at Columbia, Kelly Stewart, one of my teachers, she would sometimes be like, okay, stop. We were writing in class and she'd be like, stop. Okay, now write a monologue. And this kind of became part of my writing process. I think I internalized that mm-hmm. and like kind of wrote my plays that way. Hmm. I don't know. I mean, some, you know, like in Kodachrome, like it's, you know, someone talking to a gravestone. It's like her talking to the audience. It's like there's a lot of like specific mm-hmm. things that are happening that like it kind of needs to be a monologue. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I just like started to like monologues and then started to be like, oh, this is kind of a fun thing for us to get to know this person.
Yeah.
And also like, especially like if we can keep the drama happening while this is happening, like then like it helps us instead of like takes us out of it, yeah. which is what happens sometimes with monologues when the monologue is not keeping things going.
Yeah.
I have a book of monologues that came out recently.
Oh, what's it called?
It's called Small Explosions.
And Small it's Explosions,
all
okay.
like for...
We'll put a link in it, link at the bottom.
Thanks. during the pandemic, for like a few months, I was just like, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I'm just going to like write a monologue. And then most days I would like write a monologue. And so then there's this book... I wrote like 60 and then I tried to get them published and Applause liked it and was like, yes, but can you write like 30 more? And I'm like, yeah, okay, all right. So there's like 90, it's like a little more than 90. I'm not sure the exact number, but there's like 90 monologues and pretty much anyone can do any of them. Hmm. Which I'm kind of, instead of like being like, oh, I have so many monologues, I hope I don't get oversaturated. I'm just like leaning into it. I'm just mm-hmm. being like, let's completely oversaturate the market.
Yeah.
Like, but also here are a bunch of new ones that you don't have to do Pretty Theft because
stop doing Pretty Theft.
Here are 90 new ones that you could do. Yeah. I mean, they're not from plays and some yeah. people need ones that are from plays. Mm-hmm. So it's also kind of shooting myself in the foot because like, they, you know, they're not going to buy the play because of it. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever, has an idea for a play ever spun out of a monologue? Like written a monologue first and then be like, you know what? Let me expand on this character and maybe some, does that ever happen? I'm just always fascinated by the process, all the different ways a story can come about.
I don't think that's ever happened to me. I mean, sometimes I have written like it, a long time ago, not recently, but I've written like a 10-minute play and then been like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I can write, like maybe I like that world and want to play in it for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. And so there have been like 10-minute plays that have become like a version of a version of the 10-minute play becomes like a version of a full-length play. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've ever had something developed from a monologue as far as I can remember.
Have you written any screenplays? Any interest in that? Or
yeah. You know, it's a lot harder for me. But there are a couple that I've written that I like. Like after writing, you know, it's like every few years, like I'd like try to write a screenplay, mm-hmm. or like try to write a pilot or something. And I have a new one that I think is good, and I have a new manager who is like, yes. So, you know, when the strike's over, maybe it'll go yeah. out into the world.
And what are the differences between writing a play and let's per se writing a screenplay or a pilot? Do you take the same approach?
Well, sometimes not many things have to happen in a play, and you can't have screenplays or pilots in which not much happens. At least not the kind I'm writing. Like it, I mean, I guess like sitcom, sometimes not a lot of things happen in a sitcom. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you just have to have more plot. Mm-hmm. There's also just scenes are so much shorter. And I write, a lot of my plays have very short scenes, but scenes are so much shorter. And so you have to, things have to, you have to put things across like much, much quicker. So it's really a condensing down of something that you could like have like a 5 minute scene. Like you're really condensing it down to like a 2 minute scene. And trying to have the same thing happen. And it's hard. But it's also hard for me because like basically I'm like, okay, people on stage, I just give you a name and I don't know, they're in the dentist's office, that's it.
Yeah.
Like even like, but when you're in a screenplay, you have to like, who are these people? You have to describe them. And like, it's just a lot more of like work of stuff that I haven't thought about that I need to think about now. And then not write too much of that, but also write enough of it so that it feels like the kind of people who read those feel like, oh yeah, this is actually a screenplay.
Do you outline any of anything first before you write, like, whether it be a play or a screenplay? Do you actually write an like?
Yeah,
I was taught to write from a very close friend of mine who writes a lot of screenplays, scene by scene, just an outline of this scene, this happens, this scene, this happens, this scene. Do you do something like that, or do you just sit down and write?
I don't just sit down and write. I want to know what happens at the end, and I want to know most of the middle. You know, Marsha Norman has 5 questions, and I make sure that I've answered the 5 questions before I start writing.
Oh, can we get the 5 questions?
Oh, yeah. 5 questions please? Are amazing, and okay. I tell everybody about them as much as possible. Yes. Yeah, okay, so it's this play is about blank. It starts when blank. It ends when blank. The main character wants blank. But blank, what am I forgetting? Oh, it takes place in blank. Might be a different order of those 5. But like those 5 things of like, okay, I know what the container of the play is. I know when it starts. I also have a good ending for it.
That's
like
amazing.
I know like it's not supposed to be over here. It's not supposed to be over here. Like it's like here is what has to be in the play. And like this is has to be the beginning. This has to be the end. This play is about something. Like whatever arc I'm starting with at the beginning, like that's where I'm getting to at the end.
Yeah.
And like the main character has to want something and there has to be a reason why like they can't have what they want kind of thing. And sometimes if I'm struggling with a play, I'll be like, well, wait, did I do those 5 things? And I'll go back and be like, oh, okay, no, I don't know what this play's about. Like, what am I trying to write about? Like, what is this play about? Or like, I don't know when it ends or I don't know, am I starting it at the right place? So like this is the thing that I do that helps me a lot that I learned.
The foundation of it, basically, of what to build. And that's why it's really good to have really great teachers, because something simple like that can help you out. Even when you're an advanced writer, like, you know, somebody like you that writes so many plays, you just go back to it and you're like, huh. Back to the basics, and I can really learn a lot from just answering those 5 questions.
I mean, I have a very basic outline usually, but like the most important things are where's the start and where's the end, and if there are like multiple storylines, like what are the like points of this kind of thing. So like there's a play that I'm trying to write now, and like I don't know enough of it to start writing it, and I really want to start writing it, but I don't. I gotta figure it out a little bit more before I start writing it. And then it will just flow. Like I can write it much quicker if I just like know what's going on. But I'm very impatient and I just wanna write it.
Yeah. What kind of advice do you give to people who are, you know, playwrights just starting out and, you know, are really trying to, you know, write great plays and get them made? What kind of advice do you think would help them out?
Oh, there's so much advice. You know, so one thing is, so I have this blog. Are we going to talk about that later?
Yes.
You said
yes.
Okay, all right. But one of the things that's important about it is I interviewed over 1,100 playwrights.
I know.
Basically, I just sent them email questions and they sent them back and I posted them.
Yeah.
Like easy, kind of. It takes a long time to do 1,100 of those, but like over, you know, doing like 100 a year for like 8 years or something. But I always ask, like, what advice do you have for playwrights starting out? And a lot of them are really similar. A lot of but so much good advice from people who aren't just me. Mm-hmm. So I would tell people, go look at that.
Yes.
I was like, at one point I was like, oh, I could just make a book of this. And then I realized like, even just this, like it's like an amazingly long book to have all this. I would say read a lot of plays. Mm-hmm. I would say, especially early on, find a way to put your plays up. Like if you're in college, like find an empty room, like figure out a way in which you can.
What's the reasoning for that though? I think I know
because
why.
Because that's how you learn. That's how you learn like how you what works and what doesn't work is getting in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you will have like a college audience. And so mm-hmm. that's a very different audience than like, you know, the older people like mm-hmm. in the theater. But like what they, you know, like you're like, you'll have people who can watch it, who will respond to it mm-hmm. and you'll learn what's working, what isn't working. And you'll feel it in the room of like, what a, like, is this play working now or not? Mm-hmm. What else? I mean, I think reading a lot of plays, seeing a lot of plays, getting your plays up on their feet, mm-hmm. Hearing your plays out loud in front of people, even mm-hmm. if you can't get it on its feet or before you get it on its feet, like read it out loud, try to hear what it is, hear the pacing of it. When is it too slow? When is it too fast? When am I under-explaining? When am I over-explaining? Like mm-hmm. Is it what I think it is, or is it actually something other than what I think it is when I actually hear it out loud?
Yeah.
And sometimes, especially like for young playwrights, it might be hard to hear it the first time. You might have to hear it a couple times. Mm-hmm. I think those are the main things. There's so much.
Yeah. Well, I want to what's the website where do you know the web address for your blog that you were, where you interview all of the playwrights?
Yeah, I mean, I can give it to you, but basically type in my name, it'll be like the first or second thing that's
So let's talk about that a little bit. You have interviewed over 1,000 playwrights.
Yeah, over 1,100.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty amazing. I went on the site and it's just like, where did you find them? I mean, I didn't even know that there were that many playwrights around.
Oh, there are so many more.
It's pretty.
There's at least 10,000. There's probably more than 10,000 at this point.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Yeah, so I urge everybody to go to the website and check out all of the different interviews. It's probably a treasure trove of information. The interviews are done like an editorial, kind of like they're in question and answer form, right?
Yeah.
On the page.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool because you can read the questions and then read the answers, and there's information about all the playwrights on there as well.
Yeah. And I tell them like, you can ignore questions, you can add your own questions, you can do whatever you want. So sometimes, occasionally they'll add a question that I would never ask in a way that I would never ask, mm-hmm. Kind of just messing with me. But like overall, like there's some amazing people on there who agreed to do this.
Why did you want to start doing that?
I mean, I think part of it is for like, basically I was just like, I think playwrights are amazing and I think everyone should know it.
Yeah.
And it's so kinda like, you should all just like,
you had like you the podcast idea this. Before the podcast almost. You're like interviewing all these people. Like
it's
like way before people were interviewing playwrights.
Yeah, it was way before podcasts.
Yeah.
And I noticed like a lot of people do, like so many people do what I did now than when I started. Like a lot of, people do question and answers for like everything. Mm-hmm. I started doing it because I was getting interviewed when I was in town for Pretty Theft. Mm-hmm. And I really loved being interviewed. And I was like, this is really fun. Maybe I'll turn my blog into like an interview, situation. Mm-hmm. And just like interview like all my friends. And I was like, well, I know a lot of playwrights. I love playwrights. I'll just start interviewing like everyone I know.
Amazing.
And like almost all of them were like, yeah, totally. I'll do that. Great. Let's do that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, I saw on your Instagram that yesterday or today was your last day. Let's tell everybody you teach.
I don't teach. I'm the Playwrights Program Manager.
For
one more day.
At Juilliard.
Yeah. In which I support the playwriting program and read all the admission scripts and narrow it down from like 200 or 300 to like 10. Which I give to the playwrights the professors, mm-hmm. and then they decide like who they want. So I've been doing that for like 8 years now.
Oh, nice.
And I I have just stopped doing it. Well, I will have stopped doing it tomorrow.
Tomorrow's your last day?
Tomorrow's my last day.
Ooh, so yeah. A long 8-year journey. How does it feel to,
I think you need to ask me tomorrow. I don't know. My wife got a really cool job. I was just kind of burnt out. Like it's a hard job. And like a lot of responsibility, and I don't want that power anymore. And I don't want that, yeah.
Is it the same program that you were in? So now you're overlooking who gets into that same program?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. No, it's totally amazing. Yeah. And now I'm done with that.
And oh, so you just decided I'm going to move on and do something else.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to write more plays and maybe if the strike's over, do something else. Parenting. It's like parenting and playwriting. Yeah. My wife has a cool job and so she'll get the health insurance for us. And
nice.
Yeah. And like I'm having, like money wise, I think I'm having the best playwriting year I've ever had.
That's always great.
So, I mean, we'll see. Like it's not quite a living, but hopefully it's almost a living. Yeah. So that's, you know, with what she's making, it should be fine.
Yeah. That's nice. Well, what plays, do you have anything in the pipeline, any of your plays that are going to be playing anywhere that people should?
Yes. Play that is happening. I have some like, oh, maybe this is going to happen. But I know that I have this play, Christmas Tree Farm, that's going on in Hoboken at Miles Square Theater around Christmas.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty excited about. And what else?
Kodachrome? I think I saw. No.
I mean, a bunch of. I think we'll see what it is at the end of the year, but I think probably like somewhere around 100 productions overall.
Wow.
So it's like all different plays. And like some play like once, or in like some plays like, you know, 20, 30 times.
Yeah.
Like Marian in Turkey. And Kodachrome are getting done a bunch. And in Turkey.
In Turkey, yeah.
And in Turkey.
You're playing with the
Clown Bar is being done in Turkey, which Clown is kind of awesome. And Clown Bar 2 is now going to be done in Turkey, too.
Yeah. And they've been, it's been going for a couple of years now.
Yeah. It's been 3 years of them doing it on and off. They do this thing, they'll basically do like one performance a month or like two performances a month, and then they'll just keep doing it.
That's incredible.
Yeah, no, the photos and the videos they post are amazing. So it's really cool to be like, okay, they really like it. And like Clown Bar is such a weird play in so many ways. But when I realized, oh, like people actually really like this, like I was hoping like that what's happening in Turkey would be happening in different cities here in the US. And that didn't happen. I mean, people are doing it more than once, and it's starting to happen now, I think. Mm-hmm. In Vegas, it's been done a few times, though. But besides Majestic Rep in Vegas, who did Clown Bar 2 and did Clown Bar like multiple times, there haven't been a lot of like doing that play again. Like I wrote Clown Bar 2 because I was like, oh, I got an idea. Maybe this will get people to do Clown Bar again. Mm-hmm. Because there are a bunch of companies for which it was like a big hit and people were really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people put on clown noses when they go in and it's like a fun, like party kind of atmosphere and it's immersive without like involving them.
Yeah. What do you think they relate to about it so much?
I don't know. It's also like, who knows, like if the sense of humor carries over. I don't know. I mean, it's about clown mobsters. So I don't know what the mobster situation is in Turkey or if that like makes sense,
Yeah.
But it's like the underground clown crime world.
Huh,
and you know, this is a very different play from Kodachrome, or this is a very different play from Pretty Theft. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's weird to be a playwright who writes plays that are different from each other in such a way, because I think most actors or theater people, like they read like one play of yours and that's what, and they assume like, oh, that's the kind of playwright you are.
Yeah.
But the person who thinks I'm the Pretty Theft playwright is very different from the person who thinks I'm like the nerve playwright, who's mm-hmm. very different from the person who thinks I'm the clown bar playwright.
Yeah.
And the Kodachrome is like the one that's being done the most, and that's basically mm-hmm. like a super sweet, like Our Town kind of play.
Yeah.
So.
And Mercy is very different.
Mercy's very different.
I mean, Mercy yeah. is a gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
Pretty intense.
Pretty intense play.
Has that ever been done?
It's only been done once so far. Someone keeps talking about doing it in New York, and then the pandemic happened. Mm. And maybe it'll happen. I don't know. But yeah, it's
someone should do it. It's such a great play. If you're watching, do Mercy,
thank you.
Please.
Thanks.
It is something about Mercy reminded me of, I don't know why, but I mean it's not the same. But there's a play called Brilliant Traces by Cindy Lou Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very, very different plays.
I read that in college. Like that was like one of the first plays when I was like, I think I want to be a playwright.
Yeah, because I worked on it in class, and it was very, very difficult. It's a farce, first of all, but it's about like this, you know, really, really like the father loses his daughter and then blames himself and stuff like that. But when I was, you know, when I was reading Mercy, it almost kind of felt a little same, but kind of the opposite. Because the wife passes, not the child or whatever it was, but it was about a man dealing with that sort of loss or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it's a very beautiful play. Any new plays that you're writing that you're excited about that you think will be published and that you're just about?
I mean, I don't know when. The thing about new plays is you never know when they're going to get published because they have to have that first production most of the time.
Is that how it works? It has to get produced and then it can get published?
Usually. Unless it's for high schools sometimes, like mm-hmm. like you can bypass that a little bit. But it's always helpful to like see it on its feet to know like if you mess something up, like there's some adjustments that had to be made.
What is that process? So I actually don't know how that works. So when you write a play, mm-hmm. right, and you want to get it published, right, you have to go to a publisher, right? Is there just, what is it, just Dramatist and like
a, oh, I have so many publishers.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think you only have two right there, but like I have so many publishers.
Yeah, Sam French and Dramatist, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, you have a production of it, and mm-hmm. hopefully it went well, and maybe you have some pull quotes from...
reviews and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so you have like, this play is good. And so you have something to put on the back. Mm. And so then you send it to...
This play is good. Yeah. Hopefully it's better than...
Hopefully someone will say, this play is good. So then you send it to the publisher with your pull quotes and like you might send it to a few publishers at once. Mm-hmm. Depending off like if it's like an off-Broadway production, probably... like someone's going to publish it. Mm-hmm. And it's possible that like there'll be a bidding war of some type if like people are really excited about it.
Got it.
I've never really been in that position. Mm-hmm. I think I had someone offer more for like Concord offered more for Pretty Theft. There's Samuel. They're Concord now. There's Samuel French at the time. Yeah. They offered more and then DPS was like, no. That was a long time ago. But like I wouldn't have a relationship with Concord if I hadn't gone with them over DPS.
Right. Yeah,
and DPS was pissed for a while. But like it's all completely different people over there now. So that's water under the bridge.
Very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Well, I am looking forward to any of your new plays. As I was telling you before we started the show, I love Nerve, and I'm going to see if I can if I can somehow get my friend to do this with me. It's a really, really amazing play. If anybody out there is looking for a great two-hander, Nerve is amazing. Thank you so much, Adam.
Yeah,
man. I really,
absolutely.
Really appreciate you coming. It was wonderful. Thanks for giving us your time. And
for sure.
Hopefully I'll be working on your play soon.
Great.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot.